This is the Next Level Running Podcast, brought to you by the expert coaches at Run Doyen, helping runners of all levels crush their goals on race day by matching you with the perfect coach or training plan.
Welcome back, everyone, and thank you for joining us here again on the Next Level Running Podcast. As always, I'm your host, David Jankowski, here kicking off this month's long-form edition of the Next Level Running Podcast, here always on the 26th. Of course, too, before we jump into things, a few quick housekeeping items. As all of you longtime listeners know, I've got a few links in the description for you to go check out, go meander around. A lot of great ways to be part of the Run Doyen community. Those include a link to our Instagram page, that's at Run Doyen. Benefit of following us there is you can get a push notification when we have our live conversations. That way you can join those conversations and actually type in your questions to our coaches as they're discussing a topic, and they'll answer that live as they're going. Of course, I replay those here on the Next Level Running Podcast on the 13th of every month as well. Also in the description for you, check out our Facebook group page, the Next Level Running Facebook group. Really great running community there, a great place to share successes, meet other runners from across the world, and too many of our coaches hang out on those forums. And we'll answer your questions if you have them there. We also pull a lot of our questions out of that Facebook group. So definitely participate there. We love the community. Even if all you want to do is kind of watch and see what others are doing, hey, there's a place for you. Finally, we also have the Doyen Dashers program. You've heard about this the last few months if you're a listener. It's a new program that's by request. A lot of people said, you know, I'm not ready to jump into a full-time commitment with a running coach, but I'd like something a little more tailored, that has a little bit more guidance than just a basic running plan. And so the Doyen Dashers program is a monthly subscription program that gives you a full catalog of videos from all of our coaches that walk you through some of the things that a lot of people have trouble with, from the basics to from like things like, how do I do a stride? What kind of shoe is right for me? Those kind of very basic things, all the way up to, what's the purpose of doing a tempo run? How do I build my own training cycle if that's something I wanted to do? So it's got a wide array of information for you that can be right there at your fingertips, a bunch of videos put together by our expert coaches, all for a monthly subscription. And then, too, you also have the training plans as well, 5K up to the marathon, so that if you're looking to do something and you need a training plan to keep you accountable, it's right there. In the description of this podcast, I do have a free month trial, so go check that out. If you click on that link, you'll be linked up to that free month trial and give her a go. But enough of that. Oh, I almost forgot. If you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast and to give us a ranking, whatever you think is fair. Also, share it around with any friends, family members, running partners who you think may find this content interesting. Okay, enough of the background stuff. Let's jump into the meat of today's conversation. So today we're talking about finding ways to put a little more pep in your step, a little more jive in your stride, if you will. And what I mean by pep in your step is I mean those performance enhancing practices that will put you on that pathway to success to achieve your running goals. What are those things we can do to maximize all the hard work we're putting in and reap all those efforts on race day, so that when we get to the race line, we're ready to go. And hopefully, too, that extends all the way to the finish line. To do that, I'm joined by one of the newest coaches here on the Run Doyen team, Carrie Verdon, who will talk a little bit about those performance-enhancing practices that have enhanced her own training and that, too, work with some of the athletes that she's been working with here. So with that, Carrie, welcome to the Next Level Running Podcast, and two, welcome to the Run Doyen team.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here and to be part of the Run Doyen team.
Awesome. No, it's great to have you, and it's great to see the team growing. A lot of people have a lot of different background, and it's great to, for me as one of the podcast hosts, to actually talk to everyone and get a sense of what each of the coaches are like. I think that's probably a really fun thing for a lot of our listeners as well.
Yeah, definitely.
But maybe to kick things off, tell us a little bit about yourself. You're new to the team. So where do you come from? What do you do? Why are you here?
All great questions. So I'm Carrie. I'm originally from California, but now I live in Colorado. I started running in high school, just like everyone else, you know, had a shot at the cross country team and on the track team, and eventually ran in college. I ran for CU Boulder, and I've stayed in Boulder ever since. And so running has been a part of my life for a really, really long time. Ever since graduating college, I've run professionally. And so now I'm doing marathon races, road races, track races, you name it, I'm doing it. I have just started coaching for the Rendoyan squad, and I love it. I think, you know, for me, running has been such an important part of my life for so long, and running has showed me a lot about who I can be as a person, and my running journey has been really special for me. And so being able to coach athletes and people and kind of be a part of their running journey has been something that I've wanted to do for a really long time. Mm-hmm. So now that I am able to do it, I'm having so much fun with it, and connecting with so many different athletes from, you know, around the world, really, through Rendoyan has been awesome.
Yeah. Well, and you come from one of the most storied programs in college distance running. The coach you've had there is Mark Wetmore, is well known across the distance running community. I'm sure that's been a huge part of even to your influence in coaching. I guess maybe the other way to say that is, how do you think Mark's influence has shaped the way that you are as a coach, or did that spark any interest?
Yeah, definitely. I think I've been lucky in all of the coaches that I've had. You know, my coach in high school is like a pretty famous coach in California, Chuck Woolridge. Mm-hmm. Going to CU and being coached by Heather Burrows and Mark Wetmore, that was definitely an influential, you know, he was an influential figure for me. How he coaches and the athletes he's been able to like bring up and just like have them flourish at really high levels has been awesome. And then currently I'm coached by Lee Troop, who mm-hmm. is also an amazing coach, you know, multiple time Olympian himself. So yeah, I've been really lucky to be influenced by really great coaches, and hopefully that has kind of seeped into my own coaching, and I'm able to kind of take bits and pieces from all of them and bring that into my own coaching for the athletes I coach.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm a little bit jealous. It seems like the whole way through your running career, you've always had a real pillar in the distance running community, no matter what level that is. So that's pretty fortunate. and that's quite the asset too. I'm sure there's a lot to learn that bleeds through in their training. And that's, you know, I actually think that's a good way to kind of segue into what we're talking about today, which are those performance enhancing practices, those little things that can really help make sure that you're getting the most out of what you're doing. From those coaches, from your experience, what are some of the real key things that you found that you would want to impress on other runners that they need to be locking down to make sure that they're really moving in a good direction?
Yeah, I think there's so many different things that you can focus on. So I kind of thought about this in three different categories, right? There's like the physical things you can do, like to and for your body. And then there's the mental side of like practices you can do to enhance your performance. And then there's actual like training things you can do to enhance your performance. But I think a lot of times people focus on like those physical things. And so I guess starting with a really good point. And when I say this, everyone's going to be like, oh yeah, I already know that one. It's stretching and rolling out. And I think, you know, everyone is like, yep, I need to stretch and roll out more, but then they don't actually do it. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, in my own running has been huge. Just getting a routine down of, I mean, I do it every single day, but shooting for, you know, 3 days a week of doing that stretching and rolling out can be immensely beneficial.
Yeah. And so to kind of help conceptualize this, so I think, you know, it covers a broad scope of things. So for many people, what does your routine look like for stretching and rolling out, and what types of things help keep you accountable so that, like you said, you build in a routine and that you're doing it regularly?
Yeah. So for me, I actually have a training log, and I don't do a training log online. It's like a handwritten training log. And I have training logs dating all the way back through high school. So I have a huge stack in my room, and I actually have the habit tracker. And for me, I'm just a very visual person. And so having a habit tracker, you know, I write down stretching and rolling out, and then I get to like color in a square every time I do it. And so it's like, maybe that's too type A and like too much for people. That's okay. You know, but setting a reminder on your phone, like, hey, stretch and roll out today, or maybe just getting in a routine of doing it when you're watching, you know, TV after dinner. I know that's what my parents used to do. So yeah, that's sort of how I get into the routine of things. And as for like what I personally do and what I tell my athletes to do is I have certain stretches, you know, stretching the main body parts that you're using running. So, you know, muscle groups, I should say. So, you know, your hamstrings, your quads, your glute, even your back, you know, and your quad, or I already said quads, but yeah, just those main muscle groups, stretching those. You can really just look online, like stretches for runners, and there's some pretty good stuff you can find on the internet, surprisingly.
There is, yeah. And you get, it's, I think it comes back to what you said, is it's finding those main muscle groups, and a lot of times finding those ones that you know are tough spots for you. Exactly. I know for me, calves were a big one. And then because of that, anything up above that, hamstrings and things that attach to that, really helped loosen everything up all the way through. And for other people, it's the opposite side of the leg. It's the shin. But you can find a lot of really good stuff online, or even just kind of like twist different ways. And sooner or later, you'll find that spot.
Yeah, you'll find something.
Okay. So that's a good one. So the first one being stretching, rolling out, and building in time to do that, to make that somewhat consistent. Any other things within that physical realm that we should be thinking about?
I think a huge thing that, you know, people also say, but it kind of gets overlooked is your sleep, right?
Yeah.
Like sleep is so immensely important. Like if there's one thing that you can do is improve your sleep, that would probably help so much. Because, right, the basic principle of training is to stress your body and allow it to recover so that you can adapt. And, you know, sleep is, going into the science of it, it's promoted by this hormone called melatonin, which I think a lot of people are really familiar with, especially these days. There's like melatonin pills and whatnot. But melatonin itself kind of starts that sleep cycle, but it also like starts this cascade of hormone releasing enzymes that, you know, help neutralize oxidative stress and help promote like anti-inflammatory things in your body. And so even just like melatonin is like super important. But yeah, when you think of sleep, when you're sleeping, your body's able to recover by, it produces human growth hormone and like androgens. And I mean, if you think of like performance enhancing drugs, like it is what your body is naturally producing like while you're sleeping. So overlooking sleep is like a lot of people's like main issue, I think.
No, absolutely. I think, there are a lot of things that are underappreciated that come with sleep. Like you said, some of the hormones that happen in your body that help promote recovery and muscle growth that are huge parts of not just recovery, but ensuring that you're continuing to grow within the work that you've done, right?
Exactly.
And okay, so then maybe looking back at that, what are some ways in which we can make sure that we're getting the most out of our sleep? What are some tips that we can do within the sleep cycle to make sure that it's as effective as possible?
Yeah. So, you know, a big thing is getting, I think, you know, people suggest athletes getting anywhere between 7 and 9 hours. So a lot of times it's just like the amount of sleep you're getting. But studies have shown that if you're not getting enough sleep at night, maybe you're getting 5 hours because you have to wake early or whatever it is. A nap, even if it's just 20 minutes midday, is extremely beneficial. And then if you compare people who are getting enough sleep and then people who aren't but are taking a nap, you're still getting the same benefit out of that sleep.
Yeah.
So that's really important. But as for like getting in a good routine of sleeping, I think a big thing is, you know, shutting off screens right before bed, because like going back to that hormone I just mentioned, melatonin, that's actually released through, it's connected to your optic nerve, which is really fascinating. And so if your eyes are sensing light, it is not released. And if your eyes have darkness, then melatonin is released. And so, you know, if you're sitting in bed and you're about to go to sleep, but you're staring at your phone, like that's that's harming your melatonin in your body. And so it'll be even harder to fall asleep once you do turn that light off. So just getting into a good routine of, okay, I'm going to try to aim for bedtime around here. And how can I like wind down and relax and get in those good 7 to 9 hours?
Yeah, no. And I think that's a great tip, especially like the screen time aspect of it. And I think it's something that creeps up on all of us that we don't recognize that we're doing, is how much mm-hmm. that phone or whatever it, a computer, whatever it happens to be, is connected to us. I mean, even right now we're going over Zoom, and it's at least where I am, I'm on the East Coast. So it's evening time when we're recording this. Yeah. And so that's already kind of offsetting some of my melatonin that should be maybe starting to trigger as it gets a little bit darker. And it's funny how we can forget some of these things, and how much they impact then training. That said, it sounds like you're pro nap. Is that true?
I am pro nap.
You're in the pro nap camp.
Yeah. But I know not everyone can fit in that nap in the middle of the day. Yeah. You know, it's just not realistic for people who are working 9 to 5, mm-hmm. and understanding that that's okay. You know, if you're getting a decent night's sleep at night, then you don't need that nap. Your body is doing all of those things to help you recover and to promote like really good recovery just in that 7 to 9 hours that you're getting at night. So even though I'm on nap, doesn't mean everyone has to be.
Good. I like that. I like this flexibility. This is you're making a really great coach, I would say. Okay. So we've got the first two within physical. Are there more that you would place within that physical realm?
I think that final thing I would place in there would just be making sure you're fueling properly. Mm. Because, you know, whether that's, I should say, fueling properly and consistently. Because a lot of times people are focused on fueling properly, like within their run or just after their run, but then they kind of forget about the whole rest of the day. Yep. I think being able to fuel consistently, whether that's like off season, you know, training and like when you're racing, just consistently throughout the day, throughout your training cycle, throughout the years of work that you're putting in, is going to be immensely beneficial for your body to repair, but also just have energy to be able to do the work and to do harder work mm-hmm. and faster work that you're able to improve.
No, and I think that's a great point. And I think, as much as I hate to admit this, I think while I was running professionally, I think this was something that I wasn't great at. I was good at fueling after, I was good at fueling before, but during the day, I kind of went by the old saying, if the furnace is burning hot enough, it'll burn anything.
Yeah.
And so all that was a way to cheat on what I should have been doing, right? And kind of paying mm-hmm. a little bit of attention. But I'm curious too, your thoughts on that, because there is an extent to that seems fairly reasonable. Like I'm running 70, 80, 90, 100, 120 miles a week or more. Mm-hmm. At what point does it really matter?
Does it matter what you put in your body?
Yeah.
What you're asking? That's a really great question. And I would love to see like scientific studies on this. Yeah. Because as a marathon runner, like someone who does pretty high mm-hmm. mileage myself, there's a certain extent to where, you know, later in the day or after a hard workout, I'm like, it doesn't matter what I'm putting in my body. A calorie is a calorie. Right. And I mean, I don't think anyone should be too like hyper aware of like every little thing they're putting in their body. I think as long as calorie needs are met, your body's happy. Should you be fueling with tortilla chips for every single calorie? Probably not. Yeah. You know, I'd say try to get like 80% like really, really good, healthy, nutritious food. And then the other 20% can be those ice creams, like whatever calorie just fill that calorie need. I think.
I see. Yeah. And I know too, that that's somewhat of an unfair question, but I also know that everybody listening is thinking, I run enough for those cupcakes. And so we also have to approach it. So that's my thought there. I like one thing too, that you fed into the fueling one, which is consistency. And I think you also mentioned that within all those, I think that's a key throughout. I think every one of these performance enhancing practices is
definitely
being consistent. And that's probably going to be one of the most overarching things that helps you ensure that these little pieces add up to something mm-hmm. at the end of the day. So So just wanted to pull that out since you've been hitting that on every one of these. And I think that's powerful. Did you have any others on the physical side?
Not anymore on the physical side, although I'm sure that there are.
Oh, there are plenty, I'm sure. But to be fair, as I was thinking about this before, these were actually the three that were like hitting me and stretching and rolling out. The only thing within there that I think I would even go into some of this, any little things that you could do that help your body feel like it's recovered, whether that's icing, whether or not the science actually says icing does anything for you. Yeah. If it makes you feel like it does something, go do it.
That's a really great segue into kind of the next grouping of things I have, which are like the mental side of things. So that's perfect.
Yeah, because perfect. Great.
Sometimes you just have to trick your brain.
That's right. Yeah. Well, that's why I'm the host. I can accidentally push us right in the right direction. So there we go. So let's talk about the mental then. What's your first this mental pathway that we've got going here, or pillar perhaps?
Yeah. So what's really interesting is when you think of your brain, like a lot of people don't think of that as like a important piece of your running, right? Mm-hmm. But if you think about it, like fatigue in running is rarely caused by events in like your muscles or blood. Like rarely do you deplete all your glycogen stores or have a huge lactic acid buildup where you just need to stop running. It's actually your brain stepping in before that happens as like a precautionary thing. Like, hey, I got this signal. Like maybe we should stop. And so when we're thinking of how we can increase our performance, you know, through certain practices, I think there's really important like mental strategies that people can use. And I kind of grouped them into three different things: having a positive mindset, reframing how you view things, and then practicing visualization. I think those are really important practices that people can work within to kind of increase that mental side of things.
Oh, those are great. And I really like what you said there too, that how oftentimes it's the brain that stops us, not the body. And I think we don't know that until it takes a while. Once you become fairly fit, I think you start to recognize those things where you're like, oh my gosh, I blew it in that last marathon a year ago. I just thought I couldn't go any farther, but there's a lot left in that tank. And to be fair, how many times, this is something that maybe we don't want to admit to, but how many times have during a 10K you thought, if I just stepped on that rail, I could fall down and not have to finish this race because this hurts too much?
I think that thought has gone through every athlete's brain at some point.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I think that is a thought that's certainly come through every athlete's mind at some point, whether we like to admit it or not. But I think that gets to your first point within these within this pillar. So you've got the three there, and being positive, and finding a way to be positive, even when it seems like you don't want to be. So let's break down what you can do to be positive. What are some of the strategies you can do to build that mental piece in?
Yeah. And I think that kind of goes, being positive and kind of reframing how you view something, I think go really well together. So like, let's just use an example. You're racing and you're feeling so tired and it's so hot outside and you're just like, this sucks, you know? So instead, let's try to be positive and reframe how it's going, right? So instead of thinking and concentrating on all of the bad things that are happening, concentrate on the next water stop, you know, say, reframe how you're viewing your race and say, okay, you know, maybe don't say I'm really hot right now, but say, okay, at the next water stop is a chance for me to dump water on my head. And that's when I can be like, can pull off my body. And so you're kind of like reframing your mind to think of things differently. And when you do that, and when you practice that in, you know, your training and races, it gets easier. And so you're kind of training those brain pathways to, instead of focus on negative things, you're then flipping that to then view it in a different way and view it in a different light. And it kind of like will propel you forward rather than hinder you.
I like that. And that's a big thing in the neuroscience community, is the brain is like a muscle, right? And the more you work it out, it's just like working out your other muscles, that you can build up those pathways, like you were saying, so that you enhance whatever it is that you're doing. But that's also why negative reinforcement, things like that, if you're doing negative things over and over and over, it's so hard to break those because you make those pathways so strong. But I love that. It's let's build that mental muscle. And
definitely.
So okay, so walk me through maybe some scenarios and examples too. I know you started to, but do you have a couple examples that could be a good way to really, like, in a race, I have this, you know, a terrible thing is happening to me. I want to step on that rail. That lactic feeling is happening. How do I maybe think my way through this if I can to try to get that positive mindset and reframe this?
So sometimes for me, and I tell this to my athletes too, is it's just removing your focus from that area, right? So maybe like your legs are feeling so heavy, focus on your arms, you know, or maybe your whole body is feeling horrible and you're just like, oh my gosh, focus on the person in front of you and just their stride. Mm-hmm. And then, or, you know, the ponytail that's like going back and forth in front of you. Or, you know, maybe in training, like you're just having this really rough day, but then you realize, wow, it's a beautiful day outside. The mountains are looking great, and focus on the scenery. Like it doesn't even have to be running related. It's just switching your attention to kind of either get you through or to push forward. It's, you know, it can be a lot of different things, but find things that are going well. Cause in every bad scenario, there are things that are going well. Mm-hmm. And it's just, yeah, like you said, practicing that switching in your brain.
Well, and I think what's amazing is over time. So like you said, you may look for a lot of different things to try to help get your mind off it. Maybe it's that cloud looks funny. Maybe it's the woman in front of you, her ponytail, how it looks like a metronome just going back and forth. And that kind of helps zone you out. Maybe it's you carry a buddy of mine used to carry a rock with him and like rub it in his hands because the pain from the rock would make him forget about like little things like that. But over time, the more you do those kind of tricks, the more you find what works very well, and the more you can kind of zone into that. Almost like it's it almost becomes hypnotic, and then it allows you to click out of that negative state. I love that.
And there's never going to be a point where bad thoughts just don't come into your head, right? That's just like, that's normal. And so knowing that that's normal is good, because then every time, just being more aware of it, I guess, is good. Because then the second that negative thought comes in your head, you can say, okay, I have this toolbox of all of these great ideas to help me get through this. Like, which one do I need in this moment? And then you're able to go from there and say, okay, this negative thought's in my head, I'm going to focus on this right now. And, you know, kind of push it out in a nice way.
And you know, I love the mental side. And you're making me think of another one. Thinking about reframing, another thing I really love is when conditions are poor or when everything's going poorly, flipping that around and thinking, well, the difference between me and the person next to me is that I'm willing to overcome this. I'm the kind of person who sticks my nose to the grindstone, even if it's going to rub my nose right off. And having that kind of like thing back behind in the recesses of your mind, I think a lot of times helps you work through situations you wouldn't have otherwise.
Yeah.
And then allows you that opportunity to seize that huge performance, whatever that might be.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, it's a huge thing that you can use in your, for your advantage. Yeah. And it kind of goes into that third thing that I talked about, which was visualization.
Right.
And that's the practice that I love to use, especially before big races. And something that's pretty fascinating about that is that studies have shown that your brain can't really tell a difference between what's real and what's imaginary. And I think everyone has kind of experienced this in dreaming, right? Like you're having a completely crazy, like imaginary dream that you know is like not real. Like you're flying, like don't start talking, like it is so not real. But you wake up from that and your body like feels that. Like, you know, whether it's like a nightmare and you have all this like cortisone going through your body, like that's a great way to kind of like relate that to how it feels. Like your brain doesn't know what's different. It'll still react the same. So if you close your eyes and think of a really stressful situation, even though it's not real and even though it's not happening, like your body will release cortisone. Mm-hmm. And so using visualization techniques is like a really great way to prepare for something really hard, because you're able to kind of visualize beforehand a lot of different scenarios, maybe in a race, And for example, like you said, like a really rainy day or maybe a really hot day, so that in that race, when you meet whatever like hard thing it is that you're currently dealing with, you can say, oh, I practiced this. And so instead of making like a rash decision that's like, you know, influenced by all of the stress that you're feeling in that situation, you can make like the best decision for you because you've practiced it before.
And it becomes inherent, I think, is the bigger thing. Is that just becomes like a natural outgrowth. You know the right move to make, even though you didn't really have to think through it. And so you don't lose that second, because I think so often in distance running, what holds us back from the biggest race is making the move in that moment. And the thing that we look back at a lot of times and we say, oh, you know what? I blew that 5K because when she made that move at 3K, I said, I'm going to wait because I feel tired.
Yeah.
And that was the move that separated the group. And then you can never close that barrier again, even though you felt awesome coming home the last mile.
Yeah.
And I think that those are the things, like you said, visualizing all the possible outcomes, all the possible things that could go right or wrong, and how you would respond to those things is a good way to practice in a protected scenario.
Yeah.
And then that helps enhance the way that you look at a race. And I would go farther too. You said, you know, a big thing is we don't, our brain doesn't know the difference between like that imagining and the actuality. But even two, if you've already started to learn a process and you know it fairly well, the imagining of that process still enhances the same way that practice does. So it allows you to practice things mentally, but still innervates the physical pathways in a way that those are enhanced too. Which is incredible. The data that's coming out on this, and that's why I like that you've mentioned some of the studies, is just, it's mind boggling. So
yeah, it's really
take advantage. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're visualizing things, you're creating those neural pathways so that when you come to the race and those things happen, like that girl goes or that guy goes at the 5K mark, like your neural pathway is already set. And so you can just make that decision like quickly and not hesitate, right? And then like, boom, you're there. And yeah, it's fascinating. And I think it's an overlooked way to like really enhance your running ability.
And I totally agree with you there. But that, I think that kind of wraps up the mental side. Are there more beyond positive framing, reframing, and visualization that you would put in that mental category, or anything that you would do to kind of put a bow on that whole that mental side?
I don't think so. I think that those are great ones that I always talk to athletes about. And those are things that have immensely helped me in my own running career. So I think those are really good ones to start with.
Yeah. And maybe even within that, before we jump into your third pillar, which is training, I think just in every one of these pillars, in every one of these subtopics that we're talking about, these are the types of things that you can always get a little bit better at.
Yeah.
And I think we often, and I'm rediscovering this as I'm coming back to an old skill that I was learning. The basics, replaying with the basics can be huge in enhancing the way that your overall performance is. Even if you're very fluent in whatever it is, you're regionally competitive, or you're nationally competitive, you're internationally competitive, kind of hammering down those basics in those mental, physical, and training pillars can be huge in making sure that you're really getting the most out of everything you're doing.
Yeah.
Now with that, let's hop over to that training pillar. What do we got under that training pillar? Let's click the drop-down menu. Tell me what we got here.
So, I mean, the training pillar is ironically one of the shorter things. I think a lot of people know, like, running is one of those sports where you kind of get what you put into it. But I think I see this a lot in, like, athletes that I work with. A lot of people, when they're doing training plans that they're finding online, they're just doing easy runs. And, you know, just one type of workout, or, like, just, you know, 3 mile run, 5 mile run, 3 mile run, whatever it is. And so I think, you know, if you want to get better, you have to get in a really good mixture of stress workouts with easy days to allow your body to recover. But I think, I mean, that's my huge thing with training is that it's important to get in a variety of training to work all of the different systems in your body. You know, you're improving your VO2 max or your endurance or kind of your lactate threshold. Like, it's important to kind of hit all of those because that makes you a complete athlete. Mm-hmm. And then you're able to kind of do better once you're the athlete.
I like that. So first, it's run and make sure you're actually getting the work in. Put the time in. It's pounding pavement or dirt or whatever. Pounding pavement sounds better because of the alliteration. But it's time on feet. Mm-hmm. But then within that, we have to use as much variety as possible. Well, maybe not as much as possible, but make sure there's variety in your training, just like there's variety in your diet. And maybe that's an interesting way to think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good way to think about it. I think, you know, a lot of people who start running, they do, you know, a bunch of easy days and it gets them to a certain level. And then they kind of like plateau there. Mm-hmm. And then it doesn't really get as fun. And they're like, I don't understand. It worked so well at first. Like, why isn't it working now? And that's what I see a lot with athletes I coach is they're like, I love running, but I've kind of like stayed at this level for a really long time. And I need your expertise or your help and your knowledge to help like propel me forward. And that's when I'm like, okay, what have you been doing? Like, it seems like you're kind of, you know, hitting some systems really well, but other systems lacking on. And I think once you hit, if you're able to hit all of the different systems in like a really good way, you can increase. Yeah. You can just do better.
And so something you're hitting there that makes me curious if it would be our third drop down within this menu. So that this is all balanced under our pillars and we've got three under everyone, is work the weaknesses.
Yes.
Because it sounds like that's what you're saying is not just make sure there's variety, but look at your past training and see the thing that maybe you've neglected or the thing that you ignore because I am terrible at speed work. I don't want anything to do with that crap. Don't give it to me. That maybe it's time to reapproach that thing, whatever it is that's haunting you.
Yeah. And in this sense, I think knowledge is really, really valuable and key. Mm-hmm. And I mean, shameless plug, but this is where it's really important to have a coach, right? Mm-hmm. Like someone who can see your training from a different set of eyes and just say, hey, like, you know, based on everything I know, like this is where your weakness is. And this is where we really have to focus our training on over the next couple of weeks, because this is what's going to make you great. Yeah. So it's nice to have a coach in that sense, or at least have that knowledge of, okay, these are the three things I have to work on to make me a better athlete.
Yeah. No. And I think that's often underrated. It's so easy when you go off on your own to be like, yeah, that might be a weakness, but I'll get to it tomorrow. And tomorrow never really comes. And so it's good to have somebody to really point that out to you. One, make it clear. Mm-hmm. And two, maybe confirm the thing that you already knew that you just didn't want to approach. And I know that actually happens with a lot of people I work with where they're like, yeah, I know, but I hate doing whatever it is, long runs, whatever, you know? And then sure enough, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 6 months of doing that thing more, all of a sudden they're having a breakthrough.
Yeah.
And it's not always that simple. I don't want to oversell that, but
not always.
It can be that simple. And that makes me go ahead, finish.
Oh, sorry. And just understanding like that why behind, like why you're doing training is really important, right? Because if someone's like, yeah, I know I should be doing speed work, but they don't really understand like, why is it really important? Like people have just been telling me it's important, but like understanding like the physiology behind it or like the science behind like why that's important is sometimes extremely beneficial. And then you're like, oh, okay. Like I know that I should be doing it because it helps X, Y, and Z. And so, yeah, going back to like knowledge is power. Like it's really important to just like understand that why behind the training.
And you know, that's funny. As you say that, it makes me think. So now you've hit a few things that I think are really good overarching kind of umbrellas that hold these, that sit on top of these pillars, perhaps, that you've given. So we got physical, mental, and training. Over that, we mentioned already consistency. So being consistent within these things. Mm-hmm. You just mentioned having an outside set of eyes to confirm, but also too, to help you see things that maybe either you don't want to see or you couldn't see because you just didn't know. Mm-hmm. And then third, within that, that maybe overarching pillar or umbrella, is knowing the why, the purpose of what you're doing, and executing the purpose accurately. Mm-hmm. That kind of comes back to the coach too. But I think that kind of helps kind of tie all those together, because that works across all of these areas, I think.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it definitely does.
But, yeah. No, I like how you've laid this out. This is very helpful. one thing I'm curious too. So you mentioned you do handwritten training log, which is so 1990s of you. It's okay. I prefer the handwritten training log as well. I like the physical thing in my hand. But I think this is a good reason why it's helpful to keep a training log and to have kind of a diverse set of things in your training log, not just I ran 3 miles today and it was in this time, but rather all these little pieces. I did core work, I did stretching, these are the things I ate, because you can incorporate your dietary log with your running log. And a lot of handwritten logs do that, as well as online logs, right?
Yeah. Not only is it good to just like see that over time, but it kind of gives you a sense of confidence, right? Like when you're able to see that visually, I mean, again, I'm a visual person, but you know, going into a big race, like for example, I have the Chicago Marathon in 2 weeks. I can flip through my training log and be like, oh my gosh, like look at all the things I did right in this like marathon build. Like this is setting me up really, really well. And sometimes you can forget about those little things you do, but they're so important. And I think, this whole podcast is about how important those little things are and what you can do, because they all add up over time to make you a better athlete. And it's so beneficial.
That, I really like what you said there, because you can look back and see all the great things you've done in this segment when you're doubting yourself in those last few weeks. But even better is when you're seeing a tough segment come together and you can look back at maybe 2 years ago, the worst segment I thought I ever had. And that's where my biggest PR comes from. Like, I can't tell you how many times in my career that's what happened. A race that I was ready to throw away. And then sure as heck comes out gangbusters, just killing it.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's funny you say that, because there's so many races that I go into where like the shakeout the day before, I feel awful. But because I know that if I feel awful the day before, like I normally have a really good race, then it's like, I'm not freaking out about it. Yep. I'm just like the usual, like I feel horrible. It's going to be a great day tomorrow.
Exactly. And I think it's easily lost until you see it in writing and you can actually see, no, I actually did live through this. And every one of my running logs was saying, I feel terrible. This is the worst day ever. Oh my gosh, I'm never going to run. It's really funny when you look back and you see how negative you were in that cycle.
It's funny.
But no, I think that's actually a pretty good and well laid out. I appreciate this, that you've made pillars for us and you've made this very clean. So from there, I'll let you maybe tie a bow on this, wrap us up, and kind of refresh, summarize what we've gone through today.
Yeah. So some really good performance enhancing practices. I think I kind of split it into three different sections: the physical side, mental side, and the training side. And the physical side, looking at, recovery practices like stretching and rolling out. And, we talked about like those ice baths and Epsom salt baths, if that's like what you want. And then sleep being a really, really big component of that. And it's just so important for recovering your body and your muscles and all of the hormones that get released during your sleep. And then fueling properly and consistently. Fueling properly after your workout, before, during, and just like through all of the weeks and months that you're training is really, really important. And then on the mental side of things, having a positive mindset, reframing how you view things, and then practicing visualization so that you can kind of train those neural pathways to help you make a really good game time decision and not, stumble and think about it. Mm-hmm. And then the final thing we talked about was training. And that's just, you put in what you get out, and also kind of getting a really good mix of all these different types of training, because that makes you a better athlete in as a whole. And then just having maybe a coach who has another set of eyes on your training, who helps you understand the why behind things, is also really beneficial.
Yeah. No, and I like that. I like that as the maybe the top or the chapeau to the pillars that you've laid out as well. Now I'm going to ask you a hard question. And maybe an embarrassing one, maybe not. But I think we all do this as athletes. There are areas that we neglect. So across all these pillars, across all these things, what is the thing that you're worst at doing? What is the thing that you blow most often? Or maybe a really good example in like college or high school that you were really blowing it in?
Yeah. So in college, this is a great question, actually, because in college, I was horrible at doing all of those recovery things. Mm-hmm. I wasn't stretching. I wasn't rolling out. I was getting pretty good sleep. I'm a pretty good sleeper. But I also wasn't fueling properly. And I think if you look at my college career, like you can see that I was neglecting everything because I was perpetually injured. I was, not performing to the best of my ability. And ever since then, you know, I've looked back and learned from my mistakes. And now I incorporate all these things into my daily routine. And now I'm able to compete at a much higher level. So yeah, definitely those like stretching, rolling out, those things that just like take a chunk of your day, even if it's like 20 minutes, they're easy to forget about. And I think now I'm learning how important they are. And I'm incorporating that more, and it's proven to be very beneficial for me.
And, you know, within that, one of the things you said, you were losing some of those main pieces within that physical pillar. Mm-hmm. And because of that, you were perpetually injured.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly the reason why we do these things, because it allows us to really ramp up and build momentum from training after training after training, because the people you see really blow up as athletes, by blow up mean do well, right? Expand, do continue to exceed as opposed to do poorly, are people who can run together consistent training back to back to back to back, race season after race season. And those little things help make sure that those huge injuries that may have undermined a whole segment are less likely to come up. Yeah. And so that's one way I think would be even great to think about these, is rather than taking your 6 months of stress fracture after stress fracture to be lamenting all the bad choices you've made, just build 20 minutes of that into every day and do your, whatever the thing is that you hate doing, whether it's stretching or eating right or whatever it is.
Yeah, definitely. And I think like maybe for, you know, a listener of this podcast, this could be a lot of information and they might be like, oh my gosh, like there's so many things I have to worry about. And like now do, you know, and just knowing that, look, just like for 5 minutes, sit down and think about your day and think about your training and think about one thing that you can incorporate and start really small, because even just doing one of these things, you know, working on that mental side in your training, or maybe you're like, oh, I only get 5 hours of sleep every night, like shoot for 7 hours and just, you know, try to choose one thing to kind of gradually make a routine out of, because even just choosing one of these might be your like key to that really good performance.
That's right. And even within that, I think they all build on each other, right?
Yeah.
The step today becomes so part of your routine that you can add a step tomorrow.
Exactly.
I think that's excellent advice, especially if you do find yourself feeling overwhelmed, because we did cover a lot of ground.
Yeah.
But hopefully, I'm hopeful that everyone's covering at least one thing in each of those pillars. They just got a couple to work on.
Yeah.
We all do.
Full disclosure. That's true.
But perfect. No, it's excellent. I think we've really covered the whole ground. I don't want to extend too much longer. But I appreciate your time and joining us. Welcome to the Run Doyen team.
Thank you. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
All right. I think that'll wrap us up for this month's edition of the Next Level Running Podcast. Big thank you to Carrie Verdon, one of the newest coaches here on the Run Doyen team. As always, I have a link in the description to her coaching profile. So if you'd like to learn more about Carrie or even reach out to her about coaching, that link is there for you to get in touch. Of course, too, I'll be back here on the 13th of the month this coming month, that's October, to do a Instagram Live running replay. Of course, you can catch those live and as they're happening on our Instagram page at RunDoyen. So go follow us there if you haven't already. And to, I've got to give you the reminder, make sure to be subscribed to this podcast and to give us a ranking, whatever you think is fair, and to share it around friends, running partners, colleagues, whomever may find it interesting, very helpful to us, and really helps spread our reach. We love having you with us. We hope you'll join us again on the 13th. And with that, let's close it out. Like I said, it's evening time here, so not a run day for me, or at least no more runs today. But still, as I like to say, carpe coram, let's go seize the run.
Thank you for joining us here on the Next Level Running Podcast, your source for training advice from the expert coaches at RunDoyen. If you're ready to take your training and racing to the next level, head over to RunDoyen.com and get matched to your ideal coach who will provide you with the highly customized online training you need to start crushing your goals on race day.